Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McKusick, and it's time for part two of our review of the offense against the Houston Texans in that great game on Christmas. Lamar went crazy. The rest of the offense wasn't too bad either, including King Henry. Joining me, though, to talk about it is Alec Poulianos of One Winning Pod. Alec, how you doing?
Doing great, Ken. I have a feeling that teams are done inviting us over for Christmas.
Yes, the Ravens were not good guests definitely during that game. What was your favorite part about episode one?
For me, my favorite part of episode one was just getting to talk about how historic Lamar's season's been, kind of diving into the different stats where Lamar Jackson was able to perform very well against pressure, amplified space, like everything was obviously tremendous. And just talk about the MVP race and how we might weigh those things. I think it is an interesting discussion. I understand that why a lot of voters have different opinions about the MVP and how it could be computed. But I think that was my favorite part.
I liked the great game that the Ravens had around, across the board. They won the game in the trenches on both sides. That allowed some of the greatness from Lamar in this game. Pranced around the pocket like he owned the place, which I guess he pretty much does, and made three more plays that really, I think, stand up to scrutiny as Lamar magic plays for a game. The 48-yard run, the 67-yard pass to Andrews after the long scramble, and the 9-yard touchdown to Likely, which I think we've seen on highlights. Probably not still more times than I would care to. If it's on again, I'll still watch it.
Yeah. Right. I do remember, that first broke his ankles, spin move, Lamar run, where I was like, yep, that's going to be on his highlight reel. But as his career has continued, I'm starting to wonder what this highlight reel might actually be. I still feel like that will be on there, but it's getting ridiculous. Like the Likely one against Jacksonville last year was mm-hmm. absolutely absurd. And how quickly we forget,
Bengals, Trey Hendrickson stiff arm this year. Yeah. With the eventual, was that Likely again also in the end zone on that, or was it? It might have been.
That's the other thing too, man. Like I said, like you got to give credit to these skill position players for being able to play with Lamar and be able to read his intentions and know where they go. That takes practice, and they're really good at it. And I think that's one of the reasons why keeping Likely and keeping Andrews is not insane. Obviously, they play the same position. And you might think to yourself, I don't know, we can only keep one. But part of me is like, they're kind of wide receivers, right? And they're cheaper than wide receivers. And they're doing a lot of good work for us. I'd be interested in seeing if there's an option to keep both.
Yeah, I mean, next year, they've really got two options with Andrews, I guess. One is to trade him and get some value out of him that way, which I think they may get less than what he's worth to the Ravens. Or possibly number two is they keep him. I don't honestly think they're going to extend him, but we'll see. I think this year Humphrey has played too well. He will be the one who needs to be extended. And there's a bunch of young players who need to be extended. So it's going to be a very difficult kind of decision on what to do with Andrews. And it's going to be heartbreaking. I mean, it'll be truly heartbreaking. I'm glad he's got the record this year for touchdowns for the organization, but it's gonna be a very tough call.
Yes, I would love to do a show in the offseason with you about how we might manipulate the cap going forward. I think there are things we might be able to do to not completely leverage us either, But
well, it's something Voss and I'd have you on for as a guest on Friday Morning GM for that sort of thing. So yeah. that'd be a really good episode to do, I'm sure. And you know, as the offseason comes, you're worrying less about week to week practice squad elevations and you know other players who are available in the league. You don't worry about that in the same regularity and pace. We will have some draft stuff that we look at, but I think it'd be great to talk about potential cap manipulation.
Oh, for sure. Because I mean that's actually one of the GM questions I sent you guys, and I know it was a big ask to go into, but if you look at the trends of how these top quarterback teams are manipulating their quarterback contracts, and then you think to yourself how DaCosta said we want to be in the top, you know, third of the league in cash spent each year. It's kind of inevitable that we will manipulate the cap in that way. Then you kind of can't do it. You can't. Enough teams are pushing the cap in new and novel ways that you're going to see other teams who want to be competitive in that way also push it in new and novel ways. So even if the Ravens historically haven't leveraged themselves in that kind of way, I think it is foreseeable that they will change on that. And I think we've already seen little bits and pieces of that, but I still think I give so much credit to DaCosta. He knows just how much of that lever to pull to not fully leverage himself and get the highest value out of those cap dollars still. Like, he still treats them like gold and still treats them like there is a cap.
Good.
Right?
Well, but, there is a cap.
Right. There is. But there's also a lot of leveraging you can do. I think there's a cap that DaCosta gives him of cash, right? Like, the cash spent is really the big thing. And that's what he works with, right? DaCosta does a really good job of not just like superfluously doing this. And you get yourself in very bad patterns. You can get yourself in, and you see this with, like, you know, the Saints, the classic example. You can get yourself in the patterns where you're extending people because you have to, right?
Right.
And you don't even want to, but you have to. And that's not where you want to get. So you have to be still prudent about who you give these extensions to and how you do them.
Right.
But there are ways to do it. And like I was saying, I think there's enough NFL teams that are pushing the envelope in this. If we want to still stay top spend, and I think we will, then we'll have to do it too. That's the only way you can do it.
Probably. They will. I mean, they will learn, hopefully, to ride the wave when the cap is increasing in a way that is productive. I don't want to see them go overboard when they really don't know what's going to happen with the future cap. And that's where I think a lot of the risk comes in. Cap goes up by 2 or 3% in a year, and you've factored it for a 10% growth, and all of a sudden you are way short on dollars.
Yeah.
And things will happen. They've got one of the things they did this year, which is going to really tax the Ravens next year, is a lot of NLTBE bonuses have been met.
Yes.
You know, Ronnie Stanley met his playing time bonus, and Van Noy's met all of these, you know, sack bonuses that there was no way they thought he would make them.
So not likely.
Yeah, they're not likely.
Correct. And you know, that's why I think why they built them in. I think they think to themselves, if we have to pay all these out the next year, man, we overperformed in the year prior. And hopefully that meant we got something out of it. Right. And you know, maybe they'll just do some new maneuvering for next year. You know, There's always some money in the banana stand, is how I look at it. You're never actually, you know, $500,000 away from signing, or, you know, $500,000 away from signing a player. If you need to do it, it really comes down to, like, is it worth it? Do you want to do with these things? So I think that's the minutia. And I think there's a lot to be said about still being reserved, right? And not just doing things to do them. Like, the Deontay move ended up being a bad move, right?
Yep.
At the time I was pretty on board about it. And it didn't work out, and that's disappointing. But I think the process, you know, can still be solid. And, you know, I'm glad to see how aggressive DaCosta is about trying to maintain a good team every year.
Okay. Well, as a season ticket holder, I want that. I want a good team every year. I don't need a team that needs to be in the Super Bowl every year because my owner is dying. Okay.
Yeah.
And it's literally, I mean, as if my owner is dying is what I mean by that. I'm not implying in any way that Steve is sick or anything like this. It's just, you know what I'm saying here. And maybe it applies until I'm in that spot. Is it? Well, then I'd feel differently about it. But right now, I want to see a team that's a playoff bound team every year. And the Ravens have gotten back to being that after some pretty big overspend after the 2012 Super Bowl, largely because they didn't have a safety net, didn't have it worked out with Flacco yet at that point. He bet on himself, and it really unfortunately worked out against the Ravens.
Correct.
Well, all right.
Let's talk about the offensive line. I know we like to go left to right. So let's talk about Stanley in this game.
Okay, sure. If you don't mind, I'll start out with just a short synopsis at the high level is that we talked about the opportunity set provided. There were only 4 pressures and 5 ATSs when Lamar was in there and 16 total dropbacks, which is pretty good. And that was despite the fact that the Texans rushed heavy numbers in this game. They only got 1 sack. They only had 1 flag. It was a hot, costly one, that IDP flag on Stanley. But the Ravens also, as a team, had a bunch of great mobility blocking in this game. So odd angle blocking, some great mobility blocking, but they were 24 out of 26 on pulls in this game. They made a bunch of level 2 blocks for the game they had. Let me get this right here because this is something that sums it up for everyone here. 42 blocks in level 2 by offensive linemen in this game, which is just an outrageous number. All right, but let's go ahead and start with Ronnie Stanley, who had a good game, and he'd been struggling a little bit recently, so it's really nice to see him get off the deck and play well. 58 plays, he had 49 blocks, missed 8. His only pass rush event was a half of a quarterback hit that he allowed, and that was he shared that with Rosengarten. So they each had created a part of that pressure. If I recall, they each came kind of X-ing across the pocket in a way that you really don't like it, but both of them kind of crossed the cone. But anyway, he did have the illegal downfield pass. I don't know what it's going to take to fix this, but I'll tell you, this case, it's all on Stanley. He wasn't looking at it. He wasn't paying attention. Didn't know where the line of scrimmage was. He was basically looking right towards the right side of the field, down pretty much what was the line of scrimmage or maybe a yard behind it at first. And then he suddenly decided he wanted to move forward. And it was on the, about a 16-yard pass play to Flowers, I think, which was released fairly late by Lamar. But he assumed Lamar was going to be running way early. Didn't make any sense. He couldn't have helped. Lamar was, a half the field or a third of the field away from him. So there's no way that he's going to get downfield to make a block that's meaningful to that. And if he was thinking there was some other, the swing pass, outlet pass to be thrown. I mean, there wasn't anybody around for it there too. So it was a really bad decision. So the notion, I think, that it's always the coach's fault for calling these plays or Lamar screws things up with the timing, or generally it's a price you pay for having, these RPO plays. Which wasn't true in this case at all. It was just a really bad play by the offensive lineman to allow that to happen.
Yeah, I'm glad you bring that up because so many of them this year have been in that lump, timing got thrown off. What are you going to do? Like, it happens. You're opening yourself up to that opportunity. But you're right. The Stanley one, unfortunately, was just a mental lapse. And he just made a bad decision. And it was costly. I remember when that happened and thinking to myself, like, man, not again.
You need a set of go codes is what I think they need to figure out what's going on, but they need to have some way to designate that it's okay to leave downfield right now. And somebody in the backfield, possibly Lamar, can be the one to say it. It could be a verbal code. It can be a flag from the sidelines. It could be a lot of things, but the problem is the offensive line is balancing activities between looking downfield, trying to figure out where the ball is, and he just has to be right. The marginal value of the block from that offensive lineman is very low.
Yes.
The value of the reception is very high in relative terms. So it's a really high risk, low reward thing for the offensive lineman to try and get ahead of the play downfield. So generally speaking, not good risk management. And they need a way to stop it. They need a set of go codes. They'll do this. I'm sure that's been thought of by somebody. I'm sure that's not a new concept. So it's got to be out there somewhere, and particularly with the rise of RPOs in recent years. and mobile quarterbacks, you know, you would think it's out there.
Yeah, I think the issue you have, Ken, is all these plays are so tight. They're so on the margin. You know, everybody's trying so hard to get that small edge, and that's when you get these lapses. So very unfortunate. But what was his grade?
So a little bit more. He did 6 level 2 blocks, 1 out of 2 on pulls. He did 3 highlights in this game, and he's run out of one pressure by Lamar. Lamar ran the offensive lineman out of 2 more pressures in this game, which is something he hadn't been doing for a while, but he gets 7 in the season opener. 7 times he ran offensive linemen out of pressures. This was 2, and this is the highest in, I don't know, since probably mid-season, maybe. That he hasn't had more than 2 during that period of time. So anyway, a B for Stanley. Good game. Nice to see him put a game going on the board. I'm trying to remember if he had a B last week or he had something slightly lower than that. He's had consecutive C's the last 2 weeks. So it's nice to see him get on the board, and an F the week before or the game before that. So he's now got a CCB since the bye, and there's all been pretty good opponents or the Giants, but a couple good opponents in
they,
terms
they
of the
had
Steelers.
A decent line. One thing they had was a good defensive line.
Yeah. So.
All right. So I guess this is going to be a fun one. McCary, you know, one of the guys that there's been chatter about, you know, maybe he should get replaced, this, that, and the third. Looked like a solid game to me. What did you see, Ken?
Yeah, he's been playing very well. So this is, I thought he had a solid game here. I saw PFF wasn't quite as positive on his game, and I think I know the reason why. He had run blocking issues. He had, let's get to his significant deductions. He had 3 missed blocks, but he had plenty of other blocks where he didn't get a ton of push. And I think part of that was a function of him being left behind in a place where he's not really expected to get pushed. He's expected to maintain that block, and he probably has limited upside available to him within PFF scoring system. At least that's what I think is probably the case. The other thing I'd say is gave up half a sack in the pass game that he shared with Linderbaum. Wasn't good, but they both allowed the pocket to be flushed. PFF will never show you an integer sack in that case. To me, it's a half sack to each of them because they flushed Lamar into a position where there was nothing for him to do but eat the sack. So right. It didn't matter that somebody else got the sack. Those two caused it, and that's really what it was. And in fact, I think what might have been Rosengarten's opponent, it was Pennell, I think, who got the sack, right? And so, or maybe it was Anderson. Whoever got it, it came off Rosengarten, I believe, but it came off of him because Lamar stepped outside of the frame of the pocket in that direction and therefore rendered that Rosengarten block useless. So it didn't have anything to do with him. It had everything to do with the two players who allowed the flush. So anyway, half a sack for that. Otherwise, outstanding game. 5 level 2 blocks, 3 pancakes, 9 out of 9 on pulls. Now, the Ravens have really been waiting for this to happen because they haven't had good success on pulls generally this year. McCary's been bad. Fa'alele's been bad. Both of them were good in this game. So that was something.
Right.
One highlight. A overall for the game. So outstanding game for McCary. And he is on a real heater right now since he figured out how to reduce his penalties. And I just want to get to that really briefly. All right. So McCary at guard. Let's take him since week 10 at Cincinnati. An A- in that game, then a pair of Cs, then an F, then a bye week, then an A, a C against Pittsburgh, and another A. And during that time, he's had some penalties since week 10. He stopped having penalties really in week 13 against Philadelphia, and he's had only 1 false start in 4 games since. So big improvement from McCary in that perspective, and I don't think he's in any danger of losing his job at this point for the rest of the season, including playoffs.
Yeah, and as you've spoken before, false starts are the ones you can really live with in comparison. They don't give the defense optionality. So great to see him performing better. It is good to see that when the Ravens are connecting on these pulls and having good grades across the offensive line, that it does, line up with dominant run play by the Ravens, like huge yards per carry averages, just absolutely leaning on it and being the core reason why the offense was humming.
Yeah. I do sometimes feel like my system doesn't even give good run blocking like that enough credit, because you're limited in terms of the upside of what you can get for a run.
Right.
And there are, you know, people who are probably giving, you know, effectively green grades in PFF, you know, scores up to +2 on a run play, which would be more than I would ever do, even though I would give them a highlight and give them adjustment to their score. Done that. We had a lot of highlight blocks in this game, so that was nice to see as well. 12 total highlight blocks.
Incredible. Yeah, I think your system is correct. Right? Like I do believe that the skewing towards pass blocking makes all the sense in the world. The penalty adjustments make a lot of sense as well. And even though they're dramatic, the thing you have to remember is, like you always say, you know, baseball, you might go in four one day. And yeah, that doesn't mean that you're an awful player. It just means you went 0-4 that day.
Right. Each game is not a referendum on whether or not this player can play in the NFL or not. It's a series of outcomes, a series of data points that you want to then analyze.
Correct. And yeah, too much of the media environment has that, you know, whiplash effect on any given week and any given grade. So it is important to...
How am I supposed to do my job if you can get an A one week and an F the next? It actually is funny, you know, when you talk about that.
It's funny to me too, as like an employee, because I definitely have F days at work and I definitely have A days at work. You know, it happens. Like, you have days that you're more productive than others. So it all makes sense, right? So let's go over to Linderbaum. This guy has been performing a little bit under expectation this year. Not quite as good as we were hoping. But I think a pretty solid game this week.
Yeah, I would say that. So he had the half sack we talked about. He missed 5 blocks, didn't have anything else go wrong during the game, and that added up to a good game overall. He 61 plays, 55 blocks, missed the 5. Here's the some of the really good stuff, though. Yeah. He had 11 blocks in level 2.
Tremendous.
He had 1 pancake in the game. McCary had 3 pancakes. That was pretty cool, and not very common either. Pulls, he made 2 out of 3. He had 3 highlights. And he was run out of 1 pressure by Lamar, which would be 1 kind of small additional negative to his pass blocking component. But still, a solid overall game, 0.85. I gave a pretty good adjustment because of all that juicy mobility blocking and highlights that he had. And he ends up at 0.90, which at center is a B. So good game for him. And I'll just... I don't know if I've really been telling people week after week how they're doing, but he'd been on a kind of a bad run. C-, D+, C-, C the last 4 games. So it's nice for him to get off the schneid a little bit with a B here.
Agreed. Definitely want to see him, you know, start playing his best ball going into the playoffs. I do think Linderbaum is a function of McCary and Falele in a way. So it's not surprising when he's getting flanked by 2 A's that his grade's a little bit higher. Not to say that he is, you know, leaning on those guys. Sometimes I think it's quite the opposite. However, Linderbaum, you know, I think sometimes maybe his worst events can be because other guys are also struggling around him as well.
Well, and you'd expect there to be correlation. So if you're lining up with Cam Hayward in the 1 gap for the Steelers, then you'd expect both McCary and Linderbaum probably to struggle.
Right.
Yeah. All right.
So Falele, you said at the top that he had one of his best games and that he might be protected for the rest of the season. Let's talk about it.
I think he's in pretty good shape. He looks like he did have his best game as a pro at guard. So I'm trying to remember if he's ever had a game at tackle this good. But this was, you know, he had a good game earlier this year that I got very excited about because it was early in the year and he had a fairly early in the year anyway, and he had a really good pass blocking game. This game, no pass blocking blemishes to report. He had 5 misses, but 0.91 per play, an adjustment. It was 0.05, which got him, you know, at the A level, which he was an A with or without. So it didn't make any difference the amount of adjustment he got, but level 2 blocks, 6. Okay. That's great because that's a big problem of his is not having enough mobility to hit on level 2 blocks. Pancakes. This is the really good one. 4 pancakes. That's Falele leaning on his opponent more and getting him on the ground. They do have a smallish offensive, or sorry, defensive line for the Texans. It's one of their big problems is they're not big like the Ravens are, but that's still outstanding. And then the next one is the great one. Eight pulls, 8 out of 8 on pulls. Now, one of the things he did in this game, they had a few more one gap pulls for him. So doesn't happen all that often, but occasionally they just ask a guard to loop around one player. That's a much more manageable task for Falele than asking him to make some, you know, ridiculous reach blocks to one side or whatever. He's just, his quickness is a really big problem. So that it doesn't really work for him. It's a square peg round hole situation, but he also had 3 highlights. So a fantastic game for kind of the secondary and mobility numbers. And you know, very excited about the possibility that he could play somewhere between this level and where he has for much of the remainder of the season. It'd be nice to see him really anywhere close to the middle of the midpoint of those 2 spots would be great.
Yeah. This Falele experience has been absolutely wild. The roller coaster is almost the same swings as the locker room discussion we had earlier in the show and in episode 1. I think I was calling for his head early in the season. I thought it was like completely unacceptable, mm-hmm. but you know, happy to be proven wrong that he's been able to really rise to the occasion and grow. He's such a unique prospect at guard that I think it took some time for the offense to fully understand how to maybe best use him and not get him in disadvantaged situations, because I just think, frankly, he can't do everything. But it is really, really reassuring to see 8 out of 8 on pulls. That is number one thing I think that he has problems with, just his mobility, like you mentioned. But in lining those things up is big. And, you know, one thing I'll say for Falele as well is kind of going back to your system and maybe the way you might want to approach building an offensive line in general is if this guy can be a top, you know, no marks kind of guy in pass pro, I'll live with some of the run deficiencies.
Oh, right? Sure. Oh,
you know,
sure.
Right. So it's one of those things where if he ends up being really, you know, proficient at pass blocking, then so be it. I think his mobility and feet are the number one reason he gets into trouble, you know, with mm-hmm. with pass sets too. But, you know, he's improving there. So kudos to him. What unbelievable, you know, really impressive, and just shows me why I'm not, you know, on payroll at the Ravens.
All right. Well, a good game anyway for him, and I'm happy for him. I hope he can keep it up. I'll move on and talk a little bit about, you tell me what you want to say about Rosengarten first.
Well, I mean, you know, for me, I've been a big Roger fan since the draft and really rooting him on. I've been really excited. He's had some incredible games. This is definitely a step back from the last few games.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
But, you know, still playing quite well. And I think we're grateful that we haven't seen him play at left tackle, right? We're so happy that Stanley's been having such a great year and that everything's been going so well for Stanley, all things considered. You know, I wish we had an opportunity to see him at left tackle in some like weird way, like maybe, you know, in garbage time in one of these games. But I get why they wouldn't want to do that to him. I think it's just too valuable, frankly. Part of me thinks that's one of the reasons at this point they don't want to mess him up, like, you know, have him play left tackle in these garbage time series, and, you know, see what he can do. But, you know, that he's not prepping for that, right? I don't know how fair of it would be. And also the game scenarios and such that it matters. They're probably just running anyways. So anyways, it hasn't happened. That's okay. But everything we're seeing from a right tackle perspective is really solid and looking good for the future.
Yeah, and he'd been on a great run, took a little bit of a step back in this game, 1.5 penetrations, 1.5 quarterback hits. So more than anybody, he had more event issues in this game coming up, missed 6 blocks. He did play the whole game, though, and his score was 0.69 prior to adjustment, with adjustment of 0.06 for facing Will Anderson and having some highlights. I'll get some other things about mobility that were positive. I put him right in the middle of the C range at 0.75. 9 level 2 blocks. So he had the second most on the Ravens. He was asked to move up and do a lot of that. He had 3 pancakes in the game. That's not easy. Anytime you put the opponent on the ground, it's a good thing. By the way, just as an aside here, did you happen to see the Bateman pancake of Will Anderson?
Yeah,
one of the great all-time. It's Will Anderson obviously going through in his mind, okay, I got a one-on-one rep here. How am I going to set this guy up? What's going to happen? Boom! It's on the ground, and it's freaking Bateman. It's just love to see that. That's a big feather in his cap that he'll be able to take home. In fact, that's probably something for his lifetime highlight reel. Particularly if Will Anderson goes on to be the kind of player that we expect him to be.
Yeah. Con wants one. Yeah. I think one thing, Ken, I would like to pull out, how do you grade level 2 blocks? How does that work into your system?
In terms of how does it affect the score?
Yeah.
Okay, so it only affects through the adjustment and how I write the articles. I want to have that information available. But it's because it's a measure of mobility, it's something I'm talking about as, you know, this is a potential problem. This is something how it can help the team. Level 2 blocks are generally something that can improve the run game more than a level 1 block, particularly just your average kind of level 1 block.
Oh, for sure.
So I have it for there. But when somebody gets, you know, 9 or 11, or they get a really large number and they're very successful, they don't have a lot of misses or L2 NBs on my sheet, then I would give them a couple of a point or two of additional adjustment for that as well. So we're not talking about chart topping numbers, but it's something that definitely does impact the score in some finite way.
Yeah, I thought it was just adjustment. I love level 2 blocks. That's what gets me most excited as a fan when I watch offensive line play, you know, obviously in the run game. But I think it's one of those things that you don't want to have, and I think it's smart, like, in the main adjustment point, because different plays will call for it at different times, right? Like, it's not a consistent thing. So, very cool.
Honestly, it's how the other team lines up a lot of time that determines if you're going to get an opportunity for a level 2 block. If they change their 1-3 lineup, then that you could be left out on a possibility of even getting a level 2 block.
Correct. Good point.
All right. 4 out of 4 on pulls in this game for Rosengarten. 3 pancakes for him. 2 highlights. One other negative thing was that he was run out of 2 pressures by Lamar, he was a part of both of them. So that hurt his score a little bit, but his overall score C. After adjustment, so happy with that. I'll just get a quick look at the last 2 guys here, but Jones was in there for 15 snaps as a 6th offensive lineman primarily, then came in and played the last 3 snaps at left tackle. That's 15 scored. He was in for 1 more that was penalized, and that's why you'll see probably 16 is the number in a game book or whatever. Cleveland was in there for 7 snaps. Similarly, it might be 8 if you look at Cleveland, but if there is a play difference there, it's due to a penalty. Mm-hmm. Jones made 13 out of 15 blocks. He did give up a pressure on the day, so the score was just okay at 0.73. I thought he was pretty damn effective as a mobility run blocker. Not quite enough snaps for me to give him a grade, but he had 3 blocks in level 2 and a pancake. He looks like a pretty reasonably effective mauler to me, and we haven't seen too much of him where he's really testing that, because as a 6th offensive lineman, you don't really test his mauling too much.
Right, and we're not getting to see him in pass, you know, opportunities really, but I would be comfortable with him if McCary, you know, were to suffer an injury or something. I think he would come in.
You think he'd be the first?
I do. I really do. Yeah. I don't think
it could be Voorhees again.
Oh yeah, that's a good point. It could be Voorhees. Yeah. I guess maybe. I think you're right. It could be Voorhees as well. I know. I think maybe I'm a little skewed by talking to Jason. He really likes what he's been seeing out of Jones.
Okay, he likes Jones as a guard then. Yeah, I think there's probably some truth to it, but here's the problem: if McCary goes down, then you've lost your backup tackle. Ain't no way they're risking their next backup tackle, their last backup tackle. So you got to be careful about that. If McCary was ineffective and you wanted to start using somebody else there, you could make that switch 1-for-1. But I'm not sure it's really the correct one. And McCary's honestly playing too well to consider that now. So it'd have to be a matter of injury.
Right. Yeah. Agreed.
All right. And then Cleveland made 5 out of 7 blocks, two level twos and a pancake. I saw PFF had him graded pretty high. Small sample size. He did have a pancake. He made a couple of blocks in level 2. That's going to make you look pretty good in a short set of run blocks. And they're giving a positive grade to those, where I'm effectively just giving him a 1 out of 1 on those and a 0 out of 2 on 2 blocks that he missed. But I got no problem with how Cleveland or Jones has played this season. They've both been fairly effective.
Agreed. Yeah, very curious to see what happens to Cleveland in the future. Yeah, he'll always be a mystery in Baltimore.
Yeah, there you go. Let's move on. Let's talk about the skill position players, give them a little bit of run here. Who would you like to talk about?
Sure. I would love to talk about Likely. You know, this guy comes in week 1, has this crazy game. People are wondering, you know, what the pecking order is going to be, how important he'll be. And then, you know, he's had inconsistency the rest of the year as far as how many, you know, what his impact will be in a given game, if he'll even be targeted or part of the game plan. It does definitely feel like he kind of goes in and out of vogue. But in this game, even though it was just one catch, it was an incredible one. He also had that touchdown last week. And I just feel like he's been contributing a lot, even though if he's not getting targeted on plays, I think that he's been running good routes and contributing towards getting other guys open. So really like what I'm seeing out of Likely. And curious to see, you know, how his role plays out, you know, hoping that Aguilar gets healthy. Like I was saying, maybe he'll keep seeing more snaps.
Yeah, I mean, Isaiah has been absolutely central. I think he has done anything to hurt his chances to be the guy for the Ravens going forward at tight end. I don't think he's played over the top in a way that would price him out of Baltimore necessarily. And I don't think he's played poorly to a point where the Ravens would choose to go another direction. I think that they are very much, he is one of the potential options for them to move forward with. The fact that Kohler has been hurt has really increased his playing time this year.
Yeah.
And that is something the one reason I don't think the Ravens would be playing as much 6 offensive linemen from this game is that I think if Kohler were healthy, I think this is a game we would have seen a lot of him. 40-45% snap share, something like that. And would probably had an opportunity to have a couple catches in this game as well, but it was what it was. So anyway,
I don't think they like having 6 offensive linemen. Like, I think they're a little allergic to it, similar to kind of how I am, where they really just don't want to remove a pass catching option, a really serious pass catching option,
right,
if the marginal blocking is not that big of a difference. But like you said, with Kohler's injury, they're being more open to it.
Yeah, could completely agree, by the way, that really the gain is not enough to put a 6th offensive lineman on the field unless you absolutely are running power. So, you know, when the Ravens go out and bring it out on first down, when they're getting the game over with, okay, no problem, I get it, go ahead and keep doing that. You can also stick Kohler out there and get just as much of effect, probably, because you probably get a good block, but you also have the threat of receiving that has to be respected even at that point in the game. So,
right.
I'm with you on that. Pick another player.
Number one snap earner. Obviously a little skewed by the garbage time at the end, but number one, right, positional skill position. Yeah. Snap earner. Go ahead. Yeah, next guy. Sorry.
Out-snapped Andrews significantly, who I don't have any reason why he was taken out of the game, but they apparently really wanted to give him some rest of this one.
Good. I mean, 11 days, 3 games. If you manage it on the back end, getting him out of there because things are out of hand. I love that.
We talked about Keaton Mitchell briefly, but let's do it again because, hey, he's on everybody's mind right now in terms of Baltimore. Great to see him out there again. I love rate stats, of course, as people know. I love players to keep their rate stats going. But when there's a good reason to let those rate stats crumble away, and this was one, then I think you do it. Ali was unhealthy. Definitely don't want to keep using Henry in a game where he's already ran the ball 27 times. And they got Mitchell out there, and he frankly was overworked in this game, which is bad for the risk that was maybe associated with this game. But I don't think he got hurt, and I think perhaps this gives them a better idea of where they are with him in terms of health from a heavier workload, even if it came by trial by fire.
Agreed. I kind of wish he got a little bit more run during the game, during the competitive portion of the game. I think it's interesting. I feel as though Hill played well enough to earn a large amount of snaps this year, and that's great. It's good for the Ravens. I don't think Henry would do poorly if he had to be leaned on more like he was in this game. In the competitive portion, I think Henry is a little underrated as a pass catcher, underrated as, you know, a third down back and all that. But definitely glad to see Keaton get out there and get some, you know, get some workload. Like you said, I think that's going to be really big going forward. And for the coaching staff too, to see him out there, I think will help.
I mean, this was the first game where they used Henry really a lot as a set blocker in the game. They used him five times. And they still got some receiving value out of him in the game, but five times he actually was kept in to block. And I great game. I think Henry had a great game in more than one way.
I guess the next guy I would talk about is Zay Flowers. He definitely was impacted by the snap share pretty dramatically, I would say. 65% of snaps in this game. Five targets, only two receptions on those for 31 yards, 27 yards for the long. Of course, the 16-yard pass to him was negated by the ineligible downfield player on Stanley. You know, I think it wasn't a... You know, it wasn't going to win you any fantasy championships this week, not speaking from any experience or anything. But, he continues to be a threat. When the ball's in his hands, he's so dynamic. He's the guy of anybody on the team where I get most excited about Yak, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm just really happy that he got his 1,000-yard season, first time that a Ravens player's done it in their second year. Mm-hmm. And I think it's great. I think he's really grown well this year and been a reliable top target.
Yeah, I don't want to overstate who he is as a receiver because he's certainly got limitations that are inherent with his size, but he's a terrific player. I mean, he has real value, a lot of yak value, high value as a receiver, good separation player. That suddenness you can't teach, doesn't have to be a great route runner, but if he were to develop into that at some point, he could be that much more useful because he could really throw some defensive backs off and be that much more open. But his just sticking the foot ability, stick his foot in the ground ability is remarkable. The other thing that I really noticed in watching some video of Flowers from a recent game was Flowers doesn't need to sit in the chair like bigger wide receivers in order to decelerate. So this comes up all the time at draft time. It's like, how are the deceleration characteristics of big receivers? Because in order to run good routes, you have to, and stop and go being a big one, you really have to be able to sit in the chair, decelerate, show that to the defender, and then break out of it, whether you're breaking forward or breaking backward or what you're doing. But sitting in the chair is very important. Flowers doesn't even really do that. When he comes to decelerate at the top of the stem, he's so light, relatively speaking. He just sticks his left foot out there if he's breaking towards the inside of the field from the left. To do it easily, and then he moves the direction he wants to go. It's the difference between like having a Porsche and just turning the wheel and having that be where the car goes, or having a soccer mom van and having turning the wheel to where the car goes and it rolls over in the parking lot. It's just, or when you make a turn at 35 miles an hour, you know, kind of thing. It's just a complete difference in terms of how the thing works. And you know, it'll never really matter that much if he's a great route runner or not. He needs to not give away the route, but his suddenness is just, it's always going to be deadly on its own.
Yes. he's remarkably sudden. Like you said, one of the best, like, I guess, jitterbugs that we've seen on the Ravens. Who you want to talk about next, Ken?
Oh, sure. My turn. I'm sorry. I thought a tough game for Tez Walker, kind of the second ball thrown to him, was off his hands, might have been called a drop. It wasn't. It was a little bit contested. It wasn't even called that either by PFF anyway. So the ball kind of did go off his hands. I thought maybe if anything, it's a drop. But also wasn't perfectly placed either. So it was something where I think Walker would rather have it back, have another shot at it, of course. The other ball, I think, was thrown over his head pretty significantly, or by a wasn't really a place where he could have a target. So he ends up being over two. He's logging some snaps. He's getting in there. He's certainly doing some things on special teams that are positive, but it'd be nice to see him be a little bit bigger part of the offense, particularly in this last game against the Browns, because they're going to have a fair amount potentially the second half that they just want to get over with. If particularly, you know, we hope the game is two touchdowns at halftime, but if it's not, you know, it's even going to be worse, and you know, they may need him for a variety of things. But in terms of who would most likely be out there when the game ends, he's one of the guys. And so we'd like to see him, you know, make the best use he can of these snaps now.
Yeah, Devontae Walker, I'm curious your thoughts about I'm sure, you know, I could go backwards in time and find your pod about him, about expectations, you know. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about him so far this year? I mean, I feel like we only can really grade this back half, obviously. We haven't really seen him much mm-hmm. otherwise. Are you happy with what you're seeing so far, or how do you feel?
I'm very happy with the touchdown. I'm generally speaking happy with the speed. The physicality has been less than I hoped at the beginning of the year, before training camp specifically, and that's when the expectation series was recorded. When you got to training camp, then you realized that that was going to be a problem, that he's right. just he's not a really tough physical player. He's certainly not Steve Smith as a wide receiver, who, you know, threatened to beat up guys twice his size kind of thing. right. And he's not a guy who even can get physical with a guy who's his same weight playing safety or corner. Those guys are bigger badasses than he is. So it was tough. And a guy like Christian Matthew, who is admittedly a fairly large corner who'd been in the league for a number of years, did kind of beat him up. And it was a precursor to some of that stuff happening during camp. So I'm hoping next year, time in the weight room, a little more off season training, I don't want him to spend all his time on that, because the real thing he needs is positional training. He needs to be able to, you know, have the complementary routes, which turn him into an outstanding deep threat because he's got the comeback that goes with it.
Yeah, I think he's a player that will benefit greatly from a year in the weight room, in the NFL weight room. And I am cautiously optimistic about his outlooks going forward, and his ability to contribute on the team, you know, long-term. I mean, maybe the next guy we talk about could be Tylan Wallace, and how he was a very slow burn becoming a productive, mm-hmm. you know, NFL wide receiver. Obviously was productive in special teams for a long time. But then,
Chris Moore.
Yeah. Chris Moore as well. So, I have higher hopes for Walker, than Tylan Wallace has maybe reached, or Chris Moore has reached. But they're both, you know, at least from a Tyler perspective, they're both fourth round picks, right? Mm-hmm. So this kind of gives you an idea of maybe what is reasonable to expect, you know, out of a guy like that. So I'm hoping that he has a really. I think camp next year will be huge for him. I can't wait to see what he looks like in camp next year. But you know, if he's able to contribute it for a couple snaps this year and be a deep threat, and Lamar has connection with him, so be it. That'd be amazing.
Yeah. Well, is. His chance may come. He's got a long way to be a replacement for Aguilar. Like, if he could do 70% of the things that Aguilar can do as a veteran receiver to get open in the middle, plus be a deep threat, I mean, that would be amazing, because Aguilar doesn't really have that same kind of deep threat kind of right. value to him. But we're 2+ years away from that, probably.
We are.
So, at present, all I want is complimentary routes and a little bit of better physical standing by next season. Did you want any other?
I do want to talk about Derrick Henry. I wrote in my notes for our show, honestly, the safety was pretty inexcusable. You know, mm-hmm. had a great game otherwise, like truly one of his best games as a Raven otherwise. That was a big blemish and really just lacked, you know, kind of like the Stanley, you know, penalty, just mm-hmm. lacked awareness, right? Like mm-hmm. that wasn't the place to try to bump the outside. Just live the fight another down. Very disappointing to see that. Took away, you know, the shutout for the defense. You know, only in fantasy points will you get a shutout for the Ravens defense. But you know, I was really bummed to see that. And I hope, you know, what do we learn from that? Okay. Maybe if it comes to the playoffs, we have another deep one, he won't do that. You know, right? Like, hey, happened in this game, wasn't consequential in the grand scheme of things. I hope it's something he can, you know, learn from. He's a great player. It's not like no one's going to take it harder than him. I know that. Remember, he had like a historic game earlier in the season, and he was ticked off about, you know, something random. I forget what it was. Maybe he fumbled it, but got it recovered himself or something. I don't remember. But anyways, he's tough on himself. I know he knows that, but I definitely there was one blemish, and otherwise a really productive game from Henry.
Right. It was pure awareness, and I think otherwise just so happy with how he ran in this game. Ran very hard. Ran right through contact, broke a lot of tackles. Oh, yeah. Ravens really won the big missed tackle war in this one. The Ravens didn't have a lot of missed tackles themselves. They only had 5 in the game, where they broke 13. 3 of them were wide receivers, 7 of them were Henry. I think 2 of them might have been Mitchell, and 1 of them might have been Jackson, or the other way around, well, one of those two ways. So very impressive game, any way you want to slice it, for Derrick Henry. And the historic success rate he had was remarkable. It bumped his season success rate to 59%, which, if it holds this next week against the Browns, it will be the highest in NFL history for anybody with 300 plus carries. Now, that's already a pretty limited number, but the more carries you get, the harder it is to do. The only guy who's got a better rate of success in 230 plus carries is Clinton Portis in 2002, and Pro Football Reference only has this data back to 1995. So it is a limited kind of a field to look at.
Incredible. And I think it's worth noting, modern NFL, it's always important to sometimes time to box some of these stats.
Yeah, there's some of that. The Ravens set another record by outrushing their opponents by 100 yards for the 11th time this year.
Yeah.
And that beat the Eagles, or was it, maybe it was the 12th time this year. I think it was the 11th. And the 1949 Eagles did it in 10 times in a 12-game season, I think it was. So obviously their result is more impressive in one sense. It's also less impressive in the sense that there weren't passing games competing for the opportunity back then for both teams. So you couldn't, obviously both in defense and on offense, they're going to be in better shape to stop the pass if they've got that. Anyway, still very effective. And this Ravens team is going to be fun to do searches all offseason in terms of what they accomplished historically. Let's move on. I saw one mailbag question out there. How about we hit on that real quickly? So this is from Erasmus. Thy ought not to. Okay. It says, Mitchell, did you see any pass blocking? And if so, how did it look in general? How was his awareness in the backfield? You know, it wasn't an easy time for him to have awareness. Obviously, he's finding his way again. I don't think that at the end of the game, he was in the best position to get good run blocking when the Texans knew it was coming, which is, again, a 1949 Eagles problem, but it is a problem. But he, I thought, looked pretty good. And I'm trying to get his sets and chips for you here. He just had one chip block the entire game. I'm trying to remember if this is the one, and I think it might have been his chip block. He actually just kind of put his elbow into Rosengarten's assignment. It wasn't even, he launched his body into it. He just literally put his elbow into it. And I'm sure it didn't. The pass rusher, Will Anderson, probably didn't appreciate it, but it's also not what I would really call a pass blocking rep in the fullest sense of the word. So I think it's an incomplete in terms of what we saw out of him as a pass blocker.
I agree with that assessment. Unfortunately, Erasmus, I think we just didn't have a true opportunity set for Keen to demonstrate much. Even rushing, we were talking about how they knew it was coming, and you're really just looking to stay in bounds, right? And maybe get a first down. That'd be great too. So it's just, it's really limited there. The thing that I thought was very exciting though was the pacing in the screenplay. He throttled down to allow the blocks to set up, and then he powered through and hit the accelerator. So that's always good to see.
Great job. It was a great job there. Well, Alec, I really appreciate you staying up on your Saturday night to record this with me. And we're a day later than normal for the show. So I appreciate the listeners out there
patiently waiting for this. There will be no articles this week because of the health problems I'm going through here, but we'll be back next week and include something that will look at the offensive line play. But for right now, point people to this podcast as the place to get the offensive line news, and they can come listen to this. But Alec, tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
Well, thanks, Ken. Glad I was able to help you out on this Saturday. You can find us onewinningpod.com and at onewinningpod on all the various social media microblogging platforms.
All right. Other folks out there, please use hashtag film study mailbag when you can. Like and subscribe if you're on YouTube. And otherwise, we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.